And welcome back
to Behind the Crime.
We're your hosts.
I'm Ella Calora.
And I'm Rebecca Wood. And this is our 25th episode.
Whoop whoop.
We did it. It's hot in here.
It is really hot in here.
And guys, it's so cold outside. So we came prepared and we brought blankets, our little cozy blankets. And it's hot in here, but we're wearing them anyway for the vibes.
I didn't carry it all the way over here for nothing.
Yeah, she didn't put it in her bag. She just carried it.
There was no room.
Okay.
Listen. So today we have a bit of a different topic, I think. It's still crime.
Well, literally, yeah.
But no one's, well, at least no one in mine is getting killed.
No one's killed in mine either.
Oh, there we go. So it won't be as harsh today. We're gonna talk about con men.
That's sexist.
Con artists. Well, is yours a guy?
Yeah, but
so con men. We're talking about con men.
Whatever. Yeah.
Okay, fine. We're talking about con artists. I actually, while I was researching mine, I found this famous woman who was a really good con artist. Not that I'm
good for her
saying you should be a con artist, but. Listen,
good for her.
Mine has a happy ending, so.
I mean, that's the thing. Mine, like, it's really not that bad. Like, he didn't ruin people's lives, I guess.
Yeah.
You'll see.
Are we ready to get into it?
I guess so. I'm ready.
I'm ready.
Okay. So, oh, also, if you're watching our little reels, don't bully me because I did get a little bit sunburned yesterday. So if you can see it.
You can't even tell.
I don't trust you. I'm just saying. It's embarrassing.
Okay. I promised Becky I wouldn't be silly today, so.
We'll see how that goes.
No silly faces on camera.
There will be silly faces, I'm sure.
Probably.
So my person that I found to research for this case is William Thompson. And what's really interesting is that the term con artist or con man comes from the term confidence man. And the person who actually he didn't coin the term, but it was coined for him, was William Thompson. And what also, I literally, right before we started recording, I just found out that before the term confidence man in the United States, before Thompson, con men were called diddlers.
Diddlers,
that was their name. After a character named Jeremy Diddler from the 1803 play Raising the Wind. Isn't that so interesting?
Yeah.
And weird?
I've never heard that before.
Me neither. But before this dude, that is what con men were known as. They were known as diddlers. They diddled people. Okay.
I'm going to diddle you.
So my case is actually super short because, once again, it happened in the 1800s, so it's not like we have super much information, but I did read the article that came out after William Thompson was arrested, so that's like the majority of my source is just the article. Cool. My sources, whatever. So William Thompson used a few different aliases during his time as a con artist. I'm just going to list all the different ones he used. Samuel Thompson, James Thompson, Samuel Thomas, Samuel Power, Samuel Williams, William Evans, Samuel Willis, William Davis, and William Brown.
William Davis?
Mm-hmm.
I know that name.
Was he a prankster?
A diddler, if you will?
No. What's really weird to me is, like, all of them had some variation of his actual name. Isn't that kind of dumb?
It is kind of dumb.
But everything is actually, like, in this whole case, it's really stupid. Like,
Okay. I'll save my questions till the end.
Okay. So he was known as the confidence man and is the reason that con men and con artists are called con artists. Yeah. So obviously he's not the only person to be described as a confidence man, but he was the first one to be described that way. And this whole case happened in 1849 in New York City. So there's a historian that said a quote. Her name is Karen Haltunen, and she said something about New York City in the antebellum decades. A note for people who don't know what that is basically the time between the end of the War of 1812 and the start of the Civil War.
The War of 1812. That haunts my history, my high school history class memory.
Okay. So she said, New York City in the antebellum decades was a growing urban society marked by anonymity, confusion, and an increase in movable wealth, such as paper currency, in parentheses. These conditions made possible all manner of frauds, forgeries, and confidence schemes like that pioneered by William Thompson. So also according to her, the police estimated during the 1860s that 1 in 10 professional criminals in New York were con men.
Oh.
So it was like super big time to be a con artist.
Hmm.
Peak con artist era.
Peak con artist. Peak diddler era.
I'm in my con man art. Nope. I'm in my con man era.
I'm in my diddler era. I'm a diddler.
Stop saying that. I want
to.
I'm going to hit you. Okay, so.
You can't just bring that word into my vocabulary and expect me not to use it religiously.
I could.
Oh, diddly.
So, for a few months in 1849, Thompson would legit just walk up to strangers in the city and say, after sparking up like a little bit of conversation with them, and he targeted wealthy people, at least he didn't target people who didn't have money.
That's
you know?
True.
Considerate of him.
Yeah. Get their money.
Enough. So he would just strike up a conversation as if he knew them, and they'd be like, oh, he's just some guy I forgot about. And then he would say, have you the confidence in me to trust me with your watch until tomorrow?
And they would give it to him?
They would just hand them over. They would be like, oh, sure, here's my watch. And like other items too, but most popularly he got their watches.
The trust is crazy.
I know. Like they were just like, oh, this guy that I think I know, but I don't really know how I know him. Yeah, he wants my watch. That's fine. And my other thing is like, did you discuss with them when you were going to return it tomorrow? Like they were just supposed to stand on the same street corner the whole time and wait?
I think that like these people were like, oh no, I don't remember this guy. Like I feel bad that I don't remember him, and now I should give him my watch because I feel bad.
I don't know.
That's the only logical thing that I could think in my head.
Basically, the majority of people that he asked just gave him their watch, like their pocket watch or their wristwatch, whatever. Nice. Which, by the way, especially during that time, they were expensive. Like, it's not like you can just go to Walmart and pick one up nowadays. Like, it's not the same.
Yeah, nowadays you get one for, like, $20.
Yeah.
Probably less. Mean,
you probably could get one for $20 back then, but, you know.
Well, but $20 doesn't mean $20 now.
Yeah. So, they did this to place confidence in the stranger's honesty. Like, that's why they did it. Because they were like, yeah, I trust this guy. He's an honest guy, I bet. You'd lose that bet.
Well, no.
So a lot of people who did this, they literally just believed that he was an old acquaintance and they couldn't remember. And obviously he did not ever give their watches back. He kept them. He just left and kept them. So on May 12th, 1849, Thomas McDonald ran into William Thompson and he was conned out of his $110 gold lever watch, which $110 then is so much now. I don't have the number, but you can figure it out on your own time. So then, later on July 7th, Thomas McDonald, he was walking on Liberty Street in New York City, and he saw Thompson, who had previously stolen his watch, as I just told you about. And he went to Officer Swayze, who was of the 3rd Ward, and he was nearby. So Swayze took Thompson into custody. And he tried to resist at first, but eventually he went down to the station with the officer and he walked with him willingly for a little bit. But eventually he started trying to run away. And then the officer ended up tying his hands together for the rest of their trip down to the station. Did they not have handcuffs yet? When were handcuffs invented?
I thought that they were because like it's just metal. They had metal back then, right?
Yes, they did have metal back then.
Like, then why are you using it?
I don't know.
Imagine how embarrassing it would be to be a police officer back then and being like, just stay here while I just tie just this walk, Boy Scout knot.
Not even.
Just do you imagine? Want a fishtail or do you want like a bird's nest? I don't know. I don't That's know not knots. A meme. I don't know knots.
Imagine just like being a cop and being like, hey, you, this guy says you robbed him. Come down to the station with me.
Okay.
Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. So whatever, they got down to the station and then he was tried by Justic McGrath, and he was recognized by the judge as an old offender by the name of W.M. Thompson. This man, like, how dumb are you for using part of your actual name in your like con artist fake name?
He wasn't very good.
I mean, he was. It worked. He apparently was a graduate of Sing Sing College. Don't know what that is or where it is, but that's where he went. Okay. And then Justic McGrath basically had him wait in prison until he received further hearing. And all those who were conned by him were advised to contact the police at Court Tombs, I guess, kind of trying to get their money back to see what they could do or if they could get their watches back if he hadn't already like pawned them off. Now, here's an interesting thought on my part. Did he really commit a crime? Because these people handed their watches over.
I mean, he lied.
Yeah, which I guess back
lying
then.
Lying isn't a crime.
I feel like nowadays.
Technically.
Nowadays, you'd be able to argue in court that he didn't commit a crime. They'd be like, well, that's their fault. They handed it to me. I didn't rob them. Like, I didn't take it from them. They handed it to me.
That's you know a what I'm saying? Point.
But back then, like, your word was your honor and whatever. It was a bigger deal.
But I don't think that, like, even back then, lying was a crime.
I know. So that's what I'm saying. Like
obviously what he did wasn't good.
Right. But these people handed their stuff over. Like, they just gave him their watches. That's kind of on you.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's all I have for my case. Like I said, it's really short. And I didn't tell Ella anything about this case before we started recording just because it's so wild to me.
It's just
like,
well, if you want to hear wild, stay tuned for my case because
we must pause to make sure our cameras are recording.
This man is crazy. I'm going to be talking about Frank Abagnale.
Say that again.
Frank Abagnale?
Abagnale?
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure I got it right.
Oh.
It's a unique name.
Abagnale.
Abagnale.
Yeah.
I have it.
Frank Abagnale. Okay.
I just want to keep saying it.
So, Abagnale. He was born April 27th, 1948 in Bronxville, New York. He is the son of a stationery business owner whose his father's name is also Frank, so I'll say Frank Sr. He is three of four children. And his mom's name is Pauletta. Such interesting names. Anyway.
I like Pauletta. My dad's name is Paul. And when I was younger, I would always call him Paulette and Paula. That combines both of the names I would call him. He used to get really upset. And then we bought him an ornament with the name Paula on it.
That's silly.
He did not like it.
So his parents met during World War II and his father served in. After the war, they moved to New York, and his father started his own business. So I didn't write down how old Frank was when his parents split up, but his mom decided to leave because of his father's absence. His father would just be, like, gone on business deals all the time.
Yeah.
And the children were devastated after this. Frank decided to live with his father. And he started going along on business dealings, and this is where he learned about what white-collar transactions were. And if you don't know what white-collar crimes is, it is a financially motivated, non-violent, or non-directly violent crime. It's committed by individuals, businesses, government professionals, or for financial gain.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
Also, really good show, White Collar. Henry Cavill is in it. Continue.
So we're going to get into his first schemes, which were involving credit cards. So as a teenager, he was involved in some petty crimes, shoplifting, things like that. But then he started to get bored. You know, they were too small for him. So he started to use his father's credit card to, like, make a profit. So what he would do is he would convince gas station attendants to give him a portion of his sale back in cash, and he would give them a part of the money. This went on for a little bit until his father got his credit card bill, and it was thousands of dollars.
Right.
And what Frank didn't know at the time was his father was struggling financially. So after this, his mother decided to send Frank to a school for wayward boys. Nah. And then after that...
Can I say something?
Yeah.
I don't get the whole idea of, like, sending troubled kids to, like, a place for troubled kids. You're just giving them more friends with the same interests. I know, you're
putting them in with a bunch of other, yeah.
You're just fueling them with more ideas.
I don't get it either, but to each their own. So then, after this, because his father, like, his father's financial circumstances and his parents being split up, Frank decided to leave home at 16 years old.
Why?
With very little money and no education, he decided to alter his driver's license to make himself 10 years older, and he exaggerated his education, which got him jobs. So he would just say that, like, oh yeah, I got a degree in this, and I went to this school, and, you know,
'cause he did.
I went to this high school and this college, and I did this, and blah, 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 blah.
And I'm also 26 Ooh. Years old, not 16. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. So then after a while, he was like, nah, I don't want to work anymore.
I'm with
him. And he quit. He quit working and he started writing bad checks to support himself. He wrote hundreds of bad checks and he overdrew his account by thousands of dollars. So then after this, he was like, oh man, I need to go into hiding because I... and thousands of dollars in debt.
Yeah, funny how that works. Like, duh.
So then he didn't stay in hiding for long. He got a little bored. And he started impersonating people. So he went back to writing bad checks, and he realized that he could get the bank tellers, like, trick them easier if he dazzled them a little bit. So
a little razzle dazzle.
Yeah, to get more money and to make them, like, not suspicious. Mm-hmm. He decided that pilots were very highly respectable professionals. So he stole a pilot's uniform.
Where did he get it from?
So this is how he got it. He called Pan American Airlines, or Pan Am. I might refer to it as Pan Am. Their headquarters, and he said that he lost his uniform, and he told them that it was his first week on the job and he was super embarrassed and he didn't know what to do.
Imagine you losing your whole uniform.
Yeah. And headquarters told him where to pick up a new one. And he went there, picked up his new one, and charged it to the company using a fake employee ID. He then decided he was going to learn all he could about being a pilot, and a couple ways he did this. One time, he pretended to be a high schooler writing a newspaper article on Pan American, and he figured out just all the inner workings of the company. And then he forged his own pilot's ID and FAA license, and he hitched rides across the entire world. Like, hundreds of flights.
Nice.
All over the world. He never actually flew the plane, so there is a seat in the cockpit. So there's the pilot and then the co-pilot, and then I think it's called a jumper seat. It's behind the pilots, and it's an extra pilot seat in case something happens with the two main pilots, and he would sit there. so he wouldn't actually have to fly the plane. So then, after a while, naturally, Pan Am and the police began to catch on, and he decided to change identities again. So he became an out-of-town doctor in Georgia, and when a local doctor came around, he thought that his cover would be blown. But actually, the local doctor invited him to come to the local hospital, and he gained a temporary job there.
No.
So.
There's no way.
And he never actually performed any surgeries really treated any patients. He became more of a supervisor role. So basically what would happen is, like, if he was paged and there were two other nurses in the room, he would come in and be like, well, what do you guys think we should do? And then the nurses who were actually trained would be like, well, we should give him this or we should do this. And he would be like, very good work, do that, and then leave. And so he never actually treated anyone or did any surgeries. Mm-hmm. Which, thank God, because who knows what would have happened.
Yeah.
So then, naturally, again, the police caught on, and he decided to leave town. So over the next 2 years, he bounced around from job to job, and he really decided that he was done with being a con man, and he just wanted to live a straight life. He was done. So he decided to settle in Montpellier, France.
Well, so he can see.
He wanted to leave his past behind him and just have going a normal straight. Life. Yes. And this was after he cashed 2.5 million bad checks. So then he was chilling in France, living a straight life. Living the good life. And a former girlfriend recognized his face on a wanted poster and turned him in.
What a.
So then the police obviously got him, and he served time in France, Sweden, and the U.S. During this time, his father died, and he was very heartbroken over that because he was in connection with his father, like, periodically throughout this time. So then he was granted parole after being in prison for several years, and this was in Virginia, Petersburg, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And he eventually found work in lecturing. So he would lecture about white-collar crimes, and he would provide information to bank employees about ways to avoid fraud and theft.
Oh, my God. This is just like White Collar, the show.
Might be after him. I don't know. So, in exchange for his freedom, the government told him that he had to educate them about the methods that he used to scam them and to write all these bad checks and also write all of these fake IDs. So Abagnale worked with the FBI for more than 30 years, and he is the world's foremost expert on document fraud, check swindling, forgery, and embezzlement. He also started his own company, Abagnale and Associates, to educate others on how to avoid becoming fraud victims.
Okay, he was playing the long con. Full he just conned himself into a whole career.
Full 180. So there is a movie made after him. It's called Catch Me If You Can. I watched it. Great movie. It's not 100% accurate. Abagnale himself said that it's about 80% accurate. He wasn't heavily involved in the making of it.
But that's not bad, 80%.
No, 80% isn't bad. It's a good movie. Came out in 2002, directed by Steven Spielberg. Leonardo DiCaprio plays Frank Abagnale, and Christopher Walken plays his father. And the movie inspired a Broadway musical, which ran for several months in 2011.
Oh.
Upon the film's release, more questions were raised about what parts of his life were true and what could be verified. And Abagnale later said that he regrets the film being made and he wanted to just leave that part of his life in the past.
But you can't say that when you basically made your whole career about the fact that you were a con artist. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you did it, so it's too late. A couple things that weren't completely true. So in real life, his mom never remarried, but in the movie she did remarry. And that is kind of a big part about it because, spoiler, but at the end he goes back to his house and sees his mom with the guy. And that's kind of how he's caught. He's caught the first time, actually, in the movie. Another thing, he was one of four children in real life. I think in the movie, he was the only son. And in real life, he charged $3,400 to his dad's credit card, that first credit card scheme that I told you about. In the movie, I think they had him, I don't remember if they had him charging less or more. And just a couple other little things that I won't name. Oh, the FBI agent, Carl Hanrighty, he's one of the main characters. He's not a real person. He's kind of a combination of multiple agents that were on this case over the years. So that's not actually depicting a real life person. Also, Abagnale wrote two books, The Art of the Steal, which came out in 2001, and Stealing Your Life, which came out in 2007, and they're both about how to prevent fraud. And that's what I got for you.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, you know what? When he went to France, he wasn't kidding about wanting to change his life.
Yeah, but it's still caught up to him.
So what'd you think of my little con man?
Don't call him that. I found it very interesting. You know what else was interesting? Both of ours, we mentioned in musicals. I'll read it. Hey, you don't pay attention? Yes. The term.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yes. The term diddler for artists. It came from a character. Oh, it wasn't a musical. It was a play. In the play, close. Raising the Wind, because the character's name was Jeremy Diddler, and I guess he was a con artist, but they didn't have that word yet. Have you the confidence in me to let me have your watch until tomorrow?
No.
And that is what everyone should have said to William Thompson, but did not.
Listen, the one thing that I find so interesting about Frank Abagnale is he picked the two, like, one of, like, the two, like, I feel hardest jobs to sneak, like, a pilot and a doctor.
But they're impressive.
Yeah, like, well, that's why he did it, but, like.
What's crazy is that, like, how he got away with it. Like, he was hired at a hospital.
Yeah. Like, the thing is, he wasn't caught because someone was, like, hey, that's not correct pilot or, like, plane information. Or, hey, that's not correct doctor information. He got caught by the checks, like, by cashing fake employee checks and charging things to Pan Am's account and charging things in the hospital's account. That's how he got caught. It wasn't like, hey, that's not how to treat this patient or, like, hey, that's not how you planes fly work. A plane. Yeah, like.
God, can you imagine if they actually, like, if he did just fly a plane?
If he was just sitting in the jump seat and then the co-pilot was like, hey, I don't feel good. Can you get up here? Like, what would he have done?
Fake it till you make it.
Well, yeah. Or, like, if they needed him for surgery?
I don't know. Do you think he would have done it, like, if it happened? Or do you think he would have been like, I'll go.
I think he would have said something like, I don't feel good, or like, I have a headache, I can't. Like, I think he would have come up with something, like a reason why he couldn't.
Yeah. But what's crazy is what you were saying in the end, like how he like basically was helping what the FBI.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he had a job at the FBI.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's legitimately what happens in white collar. It's this criminal. He's like an art thief, though, and he's really good at recreating art, and it's Henry Cavill, and I love him. And then the FBI agent who caught him cuts a deal with him so he mm-hmm. can be out, but he has like an ankle monitor and everything, and he like helps him solve cases. But he also like, it's a really good show, but it's like basically what happened. Like, mm-hmm. he sort of turns himself around. Like, he uses his skills in being an art thief and like con artist to help the FBI.
No, this is exactly what happened with Frank Abagnale. He, like, the FBI gave him a job to like keep him out of prison.
Yeah.
And he would sit there and basically look at bad checks all day and figure out like.
That's just so interesting because like you wouldn't think like I've seen that show. I never thought like that seems very unrealistic for that to actually happen. But it did.
It did. Yeah.
Which it's so wacky. My new word of the month is wacky and whack. So that's wacky.
My new word is diddler.
You're welcome for that. But yeah, it's a shorter episode, but not super short.
I think this one was kind of fun. No one got hurt, really.
Yeah, my guy, he was kind of just wacky. He just wanted watches. Hey, I'm just saying, like, at least he didn't, like, target people who had nothing. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying that that makes it okay or whatever. It doesn't. However, it's better than him, like, swindling the poor, like, who already had nothing, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Very interesting.
Yeah. I liked this episode. I think we could definitely do another con artist one.
Yeah, I just wish I could have known more about this dude, like, how he grew up and, like, his family. Like, what else did this man do, you know? But I guess that kind of closes us out.
Yeah. Follow us on Instagram.
@behind_thecrime. And on TikTok.
@behind_thecrime.
On YouTube @behindthecrime22.
Or just Behind the Crime.
One or the other. And then on Facebook @justbehindthecrime. And we do have our website that is linked in all of our bios. And you should check it out because I post links to all the episodes and their summaries. We eventually will be getting our sources posted there. That's just like a lot of formatting that we have to figure out. We post our Sunday suggestions there, information about the podcast and about ourselves. Oh, and also awards that we have been nominated for or won.
Yes, we never mentioned that.
We didn't ever mention that. We contributed to our radio station's PAB award, which is Pennsylvania Association of Broadcasters, because a clip of our podcast was included in our submission for excellent use of digital media.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually get that award on Friday.
Yeah. So 2 days after this comes out.
Yay. And for the Intercollegiate Broadcasting System Awards, we were nominated and a finalist for Best Podcast.
Whoop, whoop.
Yay. We did not win, but we were finalists. And that's still impressive. Super slay. Yeah. I guess that ends our episode. I can't believe we haven't talked about that yet. Oopsies.
I know. That happened like so many months ago.
Our bad, guys.
We just haven't talked about it.
I didn't even think about it. I don't know how that happened.
I know. Well, we posted on
We posted Instagram, about it. We just didn't include an episode, which I guess was a little silly of us. Hey, guys. We're a little wacky sometimes. We're doing our best.
Yeah. We're just diddlers.
No, I'm not. That's just you. Anyways.
I'm going to come up with the dance for it later.
Thank you guys for listening and watching. Yay. We will see you again in 2 weeks.
Bye.